the limelight.
Australia has conceded in an official report that the Great Barrier Reef's unique values as a World Heritage Site have been adversely affected by climate change. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you, authored by Graham Redfern, entitled Australia Demands World Heritage Experts Visit Great Barrier Reef Ahead of an Endangered List Decision. The article was published by The Guardian Daily. Please stay tuned. Australia is demanding World Heritage experts carry out a monitoring mission to the Great Barrier Reef before an international committee decides if it should be placed on a list of global sites in danger. The Australian government recently briefed international ambassadors and Paris-based delegates to UNESCO as part of lobbying efforts to keep the Great Barrier Reef off the endangered list. Australia's ambassador to UNESCO told the briefing the integrity of the entire World Heritage System, which identifies places of significance to humanity, could be compromised if the 21st Country Committee placed the reef on the list when it meets later in July. The government of Prime Minister Scott Morrison is also inviting foreign diplomats to visit the 2,300-kilometer reef off Queensland coast before the meeting. At recent briefing, which Guardian Australia has viewed, the Australian Environment Minister Susan Lee said, "We will seek a proper reactive monitoring mission before this question can be properly assessed." She said, "We seek your support in getting due process followed." Senior officials from the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, AIMS, and the Environment Department also spoke during the hour-long briefing. Attendees were told Australia had a purported strong track record on fighting climate change, allegedly had invested heavily in reef conservation, and its emissions were falling at record levels. But most recent falls in Australia's emissions were due to the economic slowdown caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Australia has claimed it wants its economic recovery to be driven by developments in the gas industry. Australia has not introduced a new greenhouse gas emissions target since 2015 and has been widely criticized for a lack of ambition. The country is also a major exporter of oil and gas. Australia's Paris-based ambassador to UNESCO, Megan Anderson, told the briefing the UN body had rushed its June recommendation to list the reef before any reactive monitoring mission had been carried out. Anderson claimed the rush to endanger list the Great Barrier Reef ahead of a mission, ahead of identifying a desired state of conservation, and ahead of an agreed UNESCO climate policy on World Heritage is not in the interest of the reef, and nor is it in the interest of protecting the integrity of the World Heritage System. Anderson and ambassadors from 10 other countries last month wrote a letter to UNESCO with their collective concerns over its decision-making process. The Morrison government claimed it was blindsided when UNESCO revealed its recommendation, blaming a lack of due process and politics. But UNESCO officials have flatly denied claims by Australian Environment Minister Susan Lee that it had given assurances the endangered listing would not be recommended or that the process had been politicized. Dr. Michel Rosler, director of UNESCO's World Heritage Center in Paris, has said monitoring missions are not always needed before a danger listing is recommended. UNESCO has characterized the endangered listing as a call to action that will alert the world to the plight of the reef and the importance of cutting greenhouse gas emissions. UNESCO pointed to the impacts from climate change and a lack of progress on improving water quality as areas of concern. There are 53 natural sites on the endangered list, including Florida's Everglades. Belize's Barrier Reef, part of the world's second largest reef system, was on the list from 2009 to 2018. Australian officials at the Monday, July 5th briefing said the Great Barrier Reef's main threat was climate change. But the international action on cutting emissions should center on the UN's Climate Change Convention and not the World Heritage Process. Rising ocean temperatures caused by fossil fuel burning have caused three mass coral bleachings in 2016, 2017, and 2020 since the reef was last considered by the World Heritage Committee in 2015. AIMS Chief Executive Paul Hardesty said his institute's long-term monitoring program was showing the beginnings of a widespread recovery, which was expected after no major impact since 2020 bleaching, the most widespread on record. But he told the briefing an increase in the amount of coral on reefs was driven by faster-growing species that were susceptible to bleaching and come and go fairly quickly. He said overall, the number of reefs in good condition was falling, while the number of reefs in bad condition was rising. China is the current chair of the committee and will host the virtual meeting from July 16th to 31st. A decision on the reef will likely be considered during a three-day block from July 21st to 23rd. An Australian government source said about 16 countries were represented at the briefing. In a statement to Guardian Australia, China's permanent delegation to UNESCO confirmed one of its officers had attended the briefing. As the host and chair of the committee, China was attentive to all communication and sharing of information ahead of the meeting, including the item on one of Australia's inscriptions. A spokesperson for Li said the government had extended an invitation to member states to see the reef before the meeting. The spokesperson said, "We think it is important that prior to the World Heritage Committee meeting, we offer member states that opportunity." Last week, five leading reef scientists wrote to UNESCO backing its decision to recommend the Great Barrier Reef be placed on the World Heritage in Danger list. Among the five scientists was Australian Professor Ove Hogelberg, who is the current chief scientist at the Great Barrier Reef Foundation, which in 2018 received a controversial $443 million government grant to coordinate efforts to build the reef resilience. Meanwhile, Australia has considered in an official report that the Great Barrier Reef's unique values as a World Heritage Site have been adversely affected by climate change. In the report to UNESCO's World Heritage Committee, the Queensland and federal governments say the reef is an icon under pressure with a deteriorating long-term outlook. As part of the process, the committee asked Australia to submit a comprehensive state of conservation report for the reef, the first since 2015. The report says mass coral bleaching events of 2016 and 2017, together with six tropical cyclones, flood plumes, and outbreaks of coral-eating crown of thorns starfish, have impacted the outstanding universal value of the property since the last State Party report in 2015. The report says the size of the property is becoming a less effective buffer to broad-scale and cumulative threats, primarily due to climate change. The report outlines the four criteria used to list the reef as a natural World Heritage Site in 1981. The report says components that underpin all four criteria have deteriorated. Under one criterion, covering how the ecosystem works, the report says climate change is having a detrimental impact on some critical regulating processes such as sea temperature, reef building, and recruitment, the addition of new young to the population, which means the ability of the system to bounce back is weakening. The report says limiting global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius is widely cited as a critical threshold for the reef. The head of oceans at WWF Australia, Richard Legg, said this report confirms those natural values have been significantly damaged and the World Heritage Committee needs to decide if they have been changed enough that the reef is placed on the endangered list.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, The Best Heritage. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Courtesy refers to proper behavior in all encounters and relationships, and is associated with respect and honor. Courtesy is concerned with interactions with fellow human beings as well as with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In both cases, courteous behavior is one of the most valuable assets one can possess. It is the key to success in all fields. On this account, Imam Ali alayhi salam has described courtesy as the highest heritage which a father leaves for his child. Courtesy is the source of affection, sincerity, friendship, and unity, and an important factor in effectiveness of speech and progress in social objectives. This is probably why Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, "The best heritage which fathers leave for their children is courtesy." So brothers and sisters, learn to be courteous, learn to act in a courteous manner. And at the same time, the best thing, according to Imam Ali alayhi salam, that you can leave for your children is being courteous. Now, we're so focused on leaving wealth and property and so on and so forth for our next generation. But, you know, this is not the best heritage. Yes, work towards that, it's good. Nobody's stopping you. But what Islam expects from you is that you have a generation that is courteous. You teach them how to be courteous to others and to the society they live in. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are talking about the best heritage that the parents can leave for their next generation, especially the father, according to the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam that we mentioned. That is courtesy. Try to make your children courteous towards others and their society. Now, what is exactly being courteous? Well, being courteous is an act of civility or respect, an act of kindness or favor performed with politeness. Muslims believe Prophet Muhammad, Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had a character as a model for all humanity to follow. The Quran describes the Prophet as, "By an act of mercy from God, you, O Prophet, were gentle in your dealings with them. Had you been harsh or hard-hearted, they would have dispersed and left you. So pardon them and ask forgiveness for them. Consult with them about matters. Then, when you have decided on a course of action, put your trust in Allah. Allah loves those who put their trust in Him." See how Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is that role model, is the most courteous of all the creations of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. With all due respect to all the prophets of Allah, Prophet Muhammad by far exceeds anyone else in being courteous. He was caring, he was affectionate, not only towards his own followers and his own peers and his own siblings and his own family, but even towards who had wronged him. And you know all the stories that we don't have time to expand on from the history at the moment, but you know that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is that role model, is the most courteous person that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent to us as a prophet. And then the heritage he left for his generation, that is the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and so on and so forth, you can see that the common denominator between all of these infallible imams was their being courteous. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we'll follow Javad Gharai, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good long trip in the winter. Hi, I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts. Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains. Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian Mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadig Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian Mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian Hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berries Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berries Village, perched on top of these escarpments. before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berries. The villagers moved from Old Berries to New Berries around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berries Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Baluchistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where Old Berries used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in New Berries. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Baluchistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Berries is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Berris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Berris Cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful bivalves. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Berry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Berris is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs that you see here are where Berris begins. Those are the shores of Berris, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions, of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Barry's territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
The light.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history. Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland on barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and the long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks. A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Ronnie, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Ronnie has no physical problems, but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Ronnie is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a 4-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26, so we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter-high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sand castle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sand castle in Germany. An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
A French company has taken the process of pizza making to a whole new level by creating a robot chef. The robot named Patsy is completely autonomous. The machine, now working in a pizzeria in Paris, is capable of taking orders, making a pizza from scratch and serving it. Having three arms, the robot can make 120 pizzas in an hour, which is 13 times faster than a human chef.
We are in a very fast process with a perfect control of time and quality, since we have a constancy offered by robotics and then an environment that is quite cool and relaxed. The idea is also to spend a few pleasant minutes washing the robot while you wait for your pizza to be made.
It took designers 8 years to develop the machine, which is claimed to be the first pizza-making robot in the world. They hope to use the technology to open robotics-run restaurants that can function round the clock. In China, scientists are happy that the world's first artificially bred leaf monkey is doing well 2.5 months after being born. The rare monkey was born at a research and protection center in Wuzhou City in April. Its birth took place several days earlier than the due date, and the baby was relatively weak at birth. However, thanks to its parents and caretakers, it has grown in a normal way. Scientists say the baby monkey is now in a good condition and its behavior is totally normal.
It is very important in terms of the cytic value. It has been growing up normally. In addition, we have found that it has a curiosity about the world and always shows some exploratory and learning behaviors. In general, it is in very good physical condition.
The center's scientists say another leaf monkey that was born in April is doing well too. These monkeys are the 8th generation of leaf monkeys that have been bred in captivity. Their successful births have raised hope amongst the scientists of saving a species that is one of China's most endangered wild animals. Imagine the hungriest you've ever been. How many hot dogs could you possibly gobble down in 10 minutes? An American man has done 76. Professional eater Joey Chestnut broke the world record in the International Hot Dog Eating Contest on Brooklyn's Coney Island. The 37-year-old managed to devour the first 30 hot dogs in only 3 minutes. The impressive win marked his 14th victory at the annual contest. He held the previous record, which was only one sausage sandwich, less than his 2021 record. Astronauts at China's space station have successfully carried out the country's first spacewalk. Two astronauts exited the core module of Tiangong to examine the station's robotic arm. They also elevated a panoramic camera and tested new generation spacesuits. The mission lasted 7 hours. According to the China Manned Space Agency, another spacewalk will be conducted soon. In June, three Chinese astronauts blasted off to become the first crew of the Tiangong station. They will remain there for 3 months. Lionel Messi is one of the most popular football players with millions of fans from across the world, but the legendary player enjoys special love and affection in his hometown. Local artists at Rosario relished the chance to honor Messi in a mural on a four-story building. The 14-meter high and 8-meter wide giant artwork stands opposite of the school Messi attended in his childhood. The mural depicts him as both an adult and a child. Messi had been the top scorer in European football leagues multiple times. He also received the world's best player award for a record 6 times. The 34-year-old currently holds the Argentinian national team's captaincy. Pangolins might look tough with their scaly armor, but they are in fact highly vulnerable animals. A Vietnamese man is dedicating his time and energy to making sure they are safe. 39-year-old Thai has been protecting pangolins since his boyhood when he saw one brutally hunted by his neighbors. The bitter experience inspired him to find or make a group devoted to saving the endangered species. Save Vietnam's Wildlife has over 60 staff and has so far rescued around 1,600 pangolins. Thai says seeing the rescued animals return to nature is the best part of his job.
The most wonderful moments in the lives of all of the conservationists at my center are the moments that we witness the rescued pangolins getting out from the transportation cages and slowly walking into the forest, because the forest is their true home, where they can have the joy of living their lives in their own way.
Pangolins are one of the most trafficked mammals in the world. Their number have fallen due to illegal trade. The animals, now critically endangered, could once be found in the rainforests across Asia and Africa. They use their sticky tongues to hunt for ants, termites, and similar prey. People around the world have their unique ways of celebrating events. In Nepal, farmers and locals celebrate National Paddy Day by jumping into muddy fields. The festival marks the start of the annual rice planting season. People joyfully sing and play in muddy water. Another popular tradition on this day is eating a mixture of curd and beaten rice with friends and family. The fun event usually draws many tourists from around the world. However, this year, it is limited only to locals due to the coronavirus pandemic. Rice is the most important crop in Nepal and accounts for almost half of the cereal production in the country. The pandemic has not stopped this British musician from holding live concerts. His audience is a very special group in Danish rural areas. Jacob Shaw, a university professor, is the man behind this experiment. He says playing for the animals has been his second best option after the pandemic forced the cancellation of many events and social gatherings. Shaw says the performance for the cows has been so rewarding that he wants to continue it even after public spaces are reopened. He says the cows seem to enjoy classical music very much.
They react differently to different pieces. We played something that was slightly more upbeat, a little bit more modern, and a lot of them didn't like it and they went away. And I think that the type of pieces which is closer to their voice, closer to their mooing, which could be similar actually to a cello, which is why it's so successful with them, they prefer that.
The cello player is sometimes accompanied by other musicians. They say the experience has helped them practice and also relieve some of the stress of a live concert.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Science fiction has turned into reality, or at least that's how the developer of Aircar describes his vehicle when it transforms from a car into an aircraft in less than 3 minutes. This prototype flying car was designed and created by Slovakian transportation professor Stefan Klein. He says that his design opens a new category in transportation. The dual-mode vehicle composed a 35-minute flight in this week between the two Slovakian airports. So far, it has completed more than 40 hours of test flight. Aircar can fly about 1,000 kilometers at a height of over 2,500 meters. That makes the dream of those who wish to ride above traffic closer to reality. A digital art museum in the Japanese capital has unveiled a stunning exhibition offering visitors an intimate interaction with nature. One of the attractions of the show is Floating Flower Garden, which is a mirrored room filled with 13,000 orchid flowers. The orchids are dangling from the ceiling and move up once a visitor walks through in the space and approaches the flowers. Once the visitors move past, the flowers descend again. This makes the visitors able to freely wander around the three-dimensional flower mass space. Tokyo-based digital art group Team Lab that runs this exhibition says the artwork is designed to help people think that they are part of the garden.
This is an installation filled with these flowers. As you walk towards them, the flowers slowly move up to create an area of space for you. Surrounded so completely by flowers, you feel immersed in the flowers, the garden itself.
There are several other installations in this exhibition. One is an outdoor piece filled with Ovid sculptures that light up after the sun sets. Visitors can see 61 different colors of light in this section. When one of the Ovids tipped over by a hand or the wind, it emits a sound. The sound is then echoed by the surrounding ovids.
IRIB English Radio.